Now, NDE Radio, a weekly exploration of near-death experiences and similar encounters with the other side. Now, here's your host, Lee Whitting.
Welcome to NDE Radio with Lee Whitting, whether you're listening on TalkZone, by podcast, through the archives of our ad-free shows on our YouTube channel, or by connecting through our Facebook page. In the early days of NDE Radio, we attempted some live call-in shows, and when folks didn't call in, I would read NDE reports from the files of IANS. Some of those reports were amazing, and you'll hear three of them on the show today, along with a story from one brave soul who did call in. Our first story from IANS describes a remarkable out-of-body experience that resulted from a Quaker-motivated meditation. The second tells how an 8-year-old's drowning gained him a spiritual guide growing up. The third IANS reading talks of being catapulted into a sphere of universal communion, and that one is followed by our call-in guest. Enjoy.
So the experiencer reported, "One evening, I was talking with a friend on the phone who knew that I was interested in exploring different spiritual practices and religions. He said, 'Hey, you should check out a Society of Friends meeting. They don't have any sermons and just meditate for an hour or so together.' I was intrigued, and after we hung up, I looked them up on the internet. I found out that they were what I knew as Quakers. And after only a few minutes of searching, I came across a posting that explained a style of meditation they do called looking for the light within. I printed it out, took it to my bed, and read what it said. It was very simple. Get into a comfortable position, close your eyes, focus your attention on the darkness, and look for a light within. When you see a light, focus on it. So that's exactly what I did. After reading the explanation, I turned out the light, lay back, closed my eyes, and right away I could see a pinprick of light inside the darkness of my brain, slightly up and between my eyes. It looked like a distant star. I focused on it, but it kept eluding me, so I used all the might I had. Suddenly, whoosh, I was out of my body and floating in space. It was very dark, but I could see pinpricks of light all around me, again like distant stars. I felt as if I were one with everything. I was everything. I was love. Everything was love. It was the most wonderful feeling I have ever felt in my entire life. Then I asked a question. All I remember are the answers. A voice boomed out so loudly that it could make the universe explode. It said, 'Everything is one. There is no past. There is no future. There is only now.' And not only that, but every possible outcome for every possible situation is occurring at the same time." That last statement I couldn't quite understand. I was shown an example of being at an intersection behind the wheel of a car and going straight, turning right, turning left, hitting the building on the corner, hitting a light post, going straight up in the air, burrowing into the asphalt, all at the same time. Every possibility was occurring at the same instant, whether I did it or not. Then I heard, "The largest of the large and the smallest of the small are all the same." And I became a wave, a spiral, or a tube of sorts that contracted and expanded in and out, with the in being microscopic and the out being infinitely large. And I understood to the depths of my being that everything was one, and that the smallest atom is the same as the universe. I was turned inside out and became everything. And everything was as tiny as the smallest particle and as huge as the universe. It was all the same, and I was it, and it was me. I was just there, floating in this pure ecstasy, knowing to the depths of my being everything I had just heard and witnessed. Suddenly, I was being downloaded with information about every question I had ever had. I have always been interested in science, physics, biology, human relations, spirituality, religion, and so forth. And in one instant, I understood all there was to know. I particularly remember understanding all about how electricity works, and then physics, and then human relationships, and feeling pure joy and a feeling of simplicity. And then an understanding that it's all love. Everything is love. Everything is one. Everything is now. Everything is love. With that, I gradually became aware of my body back on my bed and that I had a huge, goofy smile on my face with drool running down my cheek. I was back in my body with a thud. I jumped up to write down what I could remember, and even after 7 years, it's almost as clear as the moment it happened. Let me read you another story from the files of IANS. And so this experiencer tells us this. I was 8 years old when I was pulled under the water by a strong riptide at the beach. I remember trying to swim out of the tide, but I couldn't. The next thing I remember was losing my breath and seeing my life flash by, which was very short since I was only 8 years old. Then all of a sudden, I floated outside my body, and I remember looking at my arms floating and my face, and I felt so happy. It was the happiest I've ever felt and the most peace I've ever felt. I saw a shadowy figure, which I think to be my spirit guide now, because I saw him for about 10 years after this happened. He would show up, and I would visibly see him or feel him when I was scared. When I saw him, he was standing in front of a white light in a dark tunnel. I was so excited to join him, and I started floating towards him in the white light. I guess you could say my soul was floating towards him, or it might have been me still in my body, but a more transparent body. As soon as I started toward him, I heard someone, I'm not sure if it was the shadowy figure, say, "Go back, it's not your time." Right then, I felt like I was pushed back through the tunnel. I could actually feel the push. It was so hard. Actually, it was my 10-year-old brother pulling me up on his bodyboard by the arm. Out of the entire ocean, how did he find me? I was not breathing, and I was underwater. There's no way he could have known I was there. But something made him come over to where I was, reach under the water, know that I was in trouble, and pull me on his bodyboard and swim me back to shore. After this experience, my spirit guide did visit me a lot. I have psychic abilities and deep intuition in my life. I've always thought it was a positive thing that happened to me. I feel like this experience gave me an aura of peace that other people say they can feel when they are around me. It has a lot of healing power, and I'm able to sympathize with people on a deep level because I can feel what other people feel without them saying anything. I feel blessed to have had this experience. However, sometimes it's very hard for people to believe or understand. Okay, this experiencer writes, in the spring of 2003, a genetic time bomb went off and my body's time came to an end. The moment of death was upon me at age 53, and I found it a curious thing indeed. People around me grew quite excited, but an untroubled calm came over me, carrying me further and further away from the scene, as if moving me to an invisible but familiar place just sideways to where my body lay. The sirens of the ambulance were soft and melodic. The questions of the emergency room doctors sounded like a different language. Minutes after they placed me on the emergency room table and fitted an oxygen mask over my face, I felt my heart stop beating and took my last breath. I was fully awake when my heart stopped beating and my last breath passed my lips. There was a brief pause while my personality grew puzzled that I did not gasp for breath, nor seem concerned that my body had just died. I was suddenly cradled in my higher soul and catapulted for the That is the only word for it, catapulted. Wide awake, out of my body and into the sphere of universal communion. My whole life, it turned out, had been practiced for the moment of dying. My higher soul stepped forward, speaking reassuringly about how it had been through this so many times before, while my lower soul, this lifetime's personality, went mute in the face of the vast unknown. My higher soul catapulted with one last sigh of joy and gratitude. What a glorious creation. I was fully awake when I entered the sphere of universal communion. How do I know its true name? I don't. I'm not even sure it's possible for me to have a single true name, for it to have a single true name, but the sphere of universal communion is what I saw and felt. It's the only true name I can imagine, the only one I can use to describe it at all. It appeared to me as a sphere of light. But light that is aware. It was light out of awareness, not light that is seen like that we see. We don't have physical eyes without a body nor senses. Something like the warmth of sunlight, even with your eyes squeezed shut, but with the additional sense of someone present nearby and with their attention resting gently on the edges of your awareness. The light was both the substance and the medium of communion within its own spherical spatiality. An aware light that creates and sustains the possibility of shared awareness on a universal basis with its infinite spatiality. I was fully awake when I realized I myself was a sphere of communion, a sphere of aware light surrounded by an infinite number of other spheres of aware light. As I experience the sphere of universal communion, it is an infinite space of aware light that is occupied by all the individual spheres of light, of aware light that ever have or ever will exist. As if it were the one mind occupied by all the individual ideas it ever has or ever will conceive. Or the timeless, dimensionless oversoul occupied by all the individual souls that have ever been or will ever enter the realm of time, space, and personality. As I said, I do not pretend to know its true name, but the relation between the whole and its parts and between parts and parts is what I know and can still see with diamond clarity. What can I still see in that bodiless state? Each of us as an individual sphere of communion is the embodiment of two complementary halves, understanding and memory. While understanding is the principal characteristic of the higher soul, memory is the principal characteristic of the lower soul. Understanding is our individual portion of the limitless knowledge of the one soul, the evolving insight we possess into the way of the one, our individual spark of immortality. Memory, on the other hand, is the accumulated impressions of all the lifetimes we recall, the sum of all the personalities we have evoked to our soul, our enduring storehouse of mortal treasures. Each of us, as an individual sphere of aware light, then dwells in the sphere of universal communion, a unique fusion of soul and personality, understanding and memory. After the death of the body, the higher soul catapults back to the sphere of universal communion. If it is not evoked to the lower soul at that time, then it returns without any memory of that lifetime. It has its understanding, perhaps greatly evolved by its experiences of that lifetime, but no direct memory. The personality, likewise, must be evoked to the soul at the moment of dying if its memory is to accompany it to the sphere of universal communion. Otherwise, it wanders without understanding, lost and confused among all the other disembodied personalities, unaware that they no longer have a body and are only reliving the memory of their past lifetime. It is for this reason that it is so important to unite the higher soul and lower soul during this lifetime before the moment of dying arrives. I was fully awake when I realized that whenever another sphere of aware light came into contact with mine, there was an immediate and spontaneous exchange between us of our respective memory and understanding. This is why I say we are individual spheres of communion within the universal sphere of communion. When we come into contact there, all that we know and all that we are passes uninhibitedly between us in a natural and open communion of shared being. Spheres of aware light touch and so exchange the totality of their experience and assimilate one another's experience into their own. So I have come to believe from those experiences that all the individual spheres of communion are reflective of one another. I was fully awake when all the individual spheres of communion came into contact with one another at the same time, breaking through every dam of individuality and flooding us all in the totality of our shared being. This is why I suspect its name is the sphere of universal communion. When all the individual spheres of aware light periodically come into contact at the same time, every individual awareness that ever has or ever will exist is spontaneously and immediately at one with the One. I cannot say what it is that periodically draws all of us together at the same time, but cause aside, its effect is the complete and overwhelming experience of every drop of awareness in the ocean suddenly merging into the single sea of awareness. I have come to believe from those experiences that all the individual spheres of communion are relative to the sphere of universal communion. And we have a caller on the line. Kenneth, are you there?
Yes, this is Kenneth. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for calling. What did you want to talk about?
When I was 8 years old, I had appendicitis. And I was kept at home because the symptoms resembled flu. And then when I was finally brought to the doctor, it turned out to be acute, and my appendix had already burst. So there was an emergency operation, and it was pretty serious. It took two operations to finally get me back on track. But the first operation, when they first discovered that my appendix had burst, that was way back in 1963 when this happened. So I'm 59 years old now. Easter back in those days. It was a small town hospital. They didn't have a lot of equipment. So I was put under with ether, and I could really tell you a long story, but bottom line was there was a lot of female influence in my near death. I was my 8-year-old self when I got pulled up into heaven. I saw the stars. I saw the tunnel. I know that the stars that I saw going up into the tunnel were actually spirits, and I was one of them. I was inside a bubble or a balloon, as the previous story stated. And I was pulled up through a cloud barrier by relatives, and I didn't know any of them. And at 8 years of age, I didn't have a clue that my family extended beyond my grandparents. It just wasn't something that we talked about. So I was greeted by great-grandparents, and it took a while for them to figure out who I was. I had to tell them who my father was, and then we finally made the connection. But I've got pictures of my great-grandparents. I recognized them immediately when I saw the pictures. They were taken back around 1905 is what we figure, and I know that because my living grandfather, he's standing next to them in one of the pictures, and he appears to be about 10 years old. So that'd make it about 1905. But wow. When I saw the pictures, I recognized them immediately. So that was my maternal and paternal great-grandparents that greeted me when I came to heaven. And then as far as the strong female influence goes, my great-grandmothers, both of them stayed very close to me and mothered me, and we talked and we laughed, and it was a great loving relationship. And then I was told that somebody very special was going to come for me and to not be afraid. And it turned out to be a woman who had short hair that is roughly cut. I remember that. I remember she was wearing a tunic, like something really ancient. I call her mother. I didn't know what else to call her, but to me she was, the love that she had was so pure, it was like a mother. So I called her mother, and she picked me up, and I became an infant. And then she took me to a place where I saw a continuous levels inside a tunnel that went way back. And it was explained to me that I belonged to a family that had a very long history, and that each level going back in that tunnel represented a generation of people before me. And some of them saw standing there. They waved and smiled. Then in the center of the tunnel, there was an extremely bright light. And I was told to stand still while the light came to me. And then when it did, I was completely enveloped. I felt like I was completely disassembled and put back together at the same time. And that was part of when I felt like an infant and mother was holding me. And I'm not so sure that she told me who or what what this light was. I don't know if she said it was Jesus. I can't really state that for sure, but it was an extremely powerful entity. And then I saw all the developments of my life up until I was 8 years old.
One thing you said really caught my attention, because that there were your great-grandparents to meet you, mm-hmm. but they didn't even know who you were. It's as if spirits can be dispatched, not even having the full information on why they're going where they're going.
Exactly. The two older women, of course, I don't know. See, I was 8, so they looked older to me, but a 30-year-old person would look old to me at the time. So I described them as older, but they had to tell me that they were my great-grandparents, that they talked about their kids, and they talked about my living grandparents, and they said, they finally explained, well, we are their parents, and it just dawned on me, oh, yeah. My grandparents used to be young. They had parents too. Surely they did. And then it finally just soaked in. And then it was like a big celebration. And then all kinds of people wanted to let me know that they knew my father in different ways. I think I might have met maybe a couple of his school teachers or people that, you know, he was friendly with that had passed on. Just a lot of happiness, a lot of love and appreciation. And I think I even detected a little bit of problems with my one great-grandmother. Was she was a homesteader from Denmark, where those great-grandparents were. They were homesteaders from Denmark, and there was a little bit of a language barrier. It's strange.
Really?
I could communicate with them well, and it was pretty much all mental. You feel more what people are communicating more than just speech. There's more to it. It's all enveloped in kind of a package, I guess, kind of wrapped up in all that love. But there were times when my great-grandmother actually spoke out, and that was just before I was returned. I was given a choice if I wanted to stay or if I wanted to go back. And then I've read that other people have had experiences, like when they were children, they were shown a chair. For some reason, a chair or a throne is like a piece of the story. Well, I was shown the very same thing. My paternal great-grandfather was sitting in a big high-back chair when I met him. And then he actually had me sit in his chair. I thought it was no big deal. Then I was shown a chair that was my own, and I was told that if I wanted to sit in that chair, I could stay with him forever. But I wanted to communicate with my mother first. I had a need to tell her where I was, and they told me that I couldn't do that unless they went back down to Earth. So I chose to go back. And as soon as I entered my body and I felt the sickness again, I was kicking myself for doing it, because it hurt.
Yeah. Now, did you tell your parents about about your experience right away, or did you keep it to yourself?
Well, I learned to keep it to myself, but right there in the hospital room when I woke up, my living grandparents were there. Of course, my mother was there. I don't remember if my dad had made it yet. I think my grandfather was there. But anyway, my grandmother was holding my hand. She was a very sweet, you know, little lady. But boy, she was a good, powerful person. Anyway, the first thing I said was, Grandma, I met your mother up in heaven. And it stunned her. Her mouth was kind of hanging open, and I can still hear her reaction. And all the adults in the room, all of a sudden, oh, no, you must have had a dream. You've been terribly sick. It was just a dream. And they're all agreeing with each other and leaving me out, because I was just a kid. And I remember feeling really frustrated with everybody that they would do that to me. It's like, I am telling you the truth. There's no question of whether or not you're telling the truth when you're in heaven. They know that on Earth we have to hear things, and then we have to figure it out for ourselves, and then we have to filter it. And we make life a lot more complicated than we need to.
Boy, isn't that the truth?
And in closing, for those who love the Adam, Eve, and the Serpent Garden of Eden story, here's an interesting factoid from Kim Komando's email newsletter of September 14th, 2025. Kim asked, what if we measured the actual weight of all the world's digital data? Scientists gave it a shot and calculated how much mass the internet really has. Yes, including your emotional baggage from family group chats. The answer? The weight of all the world's data is the weight of an apple. That serpent's influence is still going strong. My thanks to Ians, my call-in NDEer, and even Kim Komando for today's show. If you'd like to hear it again or any of our more than 500 archived, ad-free NDE interviews, go to TalkZone's NDE radio site and hit the past shows button, or go to our YouTube channel, NDE Radio with Lee Whitting, where you can subscribe to and comment on the complete NDE radio library. And listen next Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern at TalkZone for more NDE radio. I'm your host, Lee Whitting, saying once again, thanks for listening.